Hello, and welcome to the Mushroom Link podcast. In this two-part series, Dr. Jenny Ekman talks with Jeff Price, the technical director of the Georgie Mushroom Company in Pennsylvania and the chair of the American Mushroom Institute. In part one, Jenny and Jeff talk about growing up in the Hawkesbury, differences and similarities between the Australian and American mushroom industries, and the unique mushroom economy in the United States. Let's get started.
So hello, this is Dr. Jenny Ekman from the Mushroom Link Communications Project team. And today I'm talking to Jeffrey Price, who is the son of our own mushroom legend, Graham Price. Now, Jeffrey was previously the Australian Mushroom Industry Development Officer, employed by New South Wales Agriculture, but funded by the AMGA and through HRDC and based in the Hawkesbury. Then he became General Manager of Sylvan Australia and became synonymous with Sylvan Australia until he left in 2000 to join his mother in a company in Queensland making compost. He was then lured to the USA to be technical sales representative of Sylvan USA in 2004. 2007, he joined the Georgie Mushroom Company, and he's been there ever since and is now chair of the American Mushroom Institute. So that's quite a CV. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you, Jenny. And I would say it almost sounds suspicious when you say it like that, but it didn't feel auspicious on the road to get here, I can tell you.
Yeah.
No, it's one of those things you do.
No, it's quite a career path. So let's start by just talking a bit about what it was like growing up in the Hawkesbury, because, of course, you've been around mushrooms since you were born, and I in fact have pictures of you as a tiny toddler being nursed by Graham while he's operating the composting turning machine.
Yes, I remember the first cook turner we got in the Rouse Hill, and making compost stinking. I remember when I was 8 years old, I came home from school. I have this very vivid memory. I was turning eight and I got home and my dad said, "Okay, son, you're turning 8 years old. As of tomorrow, when you come home, you're down on the farm. When your mates are off skylarking about and being galahs, you'll be here. There'll be no public holidays, no weekends. You'll learn how to work on the farm." Very vivid memory.
Oh, wow. Tough love. Yeah.
He was true to his word as well.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay. So you'd think after that might have turned you off mushrooms, but instead you went and did a degree in microbiology at Sydney University, is that right?
I did. Strangely enough, I was actually enrolled to do an honours maths degree and then changed to do agricultural science and majored in microbiology. Quite a change.
That's strange. I'll say.
I think what I like about the mushroom industry is that even though you have a very regimented system because you're following the biology of a crop, it's so frenetic in its nature, and there's always changing things happening, whether it be raw ingredients, people, COVID.
Yes, indeed.
I think it's a variety, but the similarity that I've enjoyed very much, and trying to understand why. And if anyone tells you they know why mushrooms grow, don't believe them, because we're just thankful they do. Certainly, we try and give them all the best love and attention we can, and they still grow despite our best efforts to stop them.
So Graham talks about, you know, going down to put the mushrooms to bed at night and, you know, giving them a last check. Do you remember doing that as a child growing up?
I remember that, and I remember him being away on different occasions. I would have to be going to the phase two rooms and take the temperatures down, and he made blocks in the black dampers, and then he would call at night, and I'd tell him going on to go and adjust the damper, and we thought the earth would end if we got it wrong. And but the thing I remember most about going out for the night or evening checks and putting to bed was the sky in Australia. And the stars were just incredible. I always enjoyed just that. Well, the weather was good, of course. Even in Windsor, those early days, there wasn't much light pollution. And certainly in Toowoomba, it was beautiful as well.
Well, I guess at that time growing up in Rouse Hill, that was really the edge of Sydney. There wasn't much else around.
It certainly was the edge of Sydney. And so where I live currently reminds me very much of where I grew up. We're more developed here. We were around McGrath Hill and Windsor, of course, but in terms of it's semi-rural. The kids could see corn, cows, cattle here. They've got the Appalachian Trail. Appalachian's about half an hour's drive away. So, and yet we're an hour and a half from Philadelphia, 2 hours from New York, and 2 hours from DC. So now if you look at Windsor, you're kind of 2 hours from Windsor, from Sydney. You can go to the beach, you can go up into the mountains. It's a nice balance. And so my recollections of growing up were pretty good. We had some property and I had a mushroom farm across the road, the Johnsons, and they were best friends. We used to go hang out together and roam around and have a pretty good time.
Right. So you had other kids you could hang out with who were also had to check the mushrooms at night and make sure they adjusted the dampers and so on. So
each of us had our own chores to do, I can assure you. And I have to say, I remember going in when we lost control of a crop and you'd open the door to the room and there'd see mushrooms on the floor and you have to start picking the mushrooms off the floor. And as you were trying to get towards where the beds were, and the mushrooms were pushing each other off the beds. It was a long time ago, of course. We'd never do that today.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk a bit about the industry in the USA. What do you think are the differences between the industry there, and what do you think are some of the similarities? Like you mentioned COVID.
COVID
was terrible here for mushroom farms.
I think the interesting thing is the contrast. So, we were classed as an essential industry, and when COVID broke, our sales went crazy. We could not believe it. You could not grow and harvest enough mushrooms. It was impossible.
Really?
And I have friends who are doctors and lawyers and accountants, and they're all at home. I actually spent more time at work than ever. It was quite incredible. And you have all these different things. We didn't really know what was happening to begin with, but no one did. But the business had to go on. We had to keep harvesting and growing mushrooms. And, our truck drivers each had an alcohol bottle and wipes, and they'd get out of the truck and wipe it. And just incredible the lengths to go to get things done. But somehow we managed to do it.
So how did you manage with staff at that time? Could you get staff
staff was still all intact. And so unlike other industries that say, go home and work there. How do you pick a mushroom from home? How do you make compost from home? It's impossible. So we were the exact opposite. So we had to be there. And as we had other staff around us who they or their families had COVID in the early days, you had to be off if your staff was exposed, your spouse or daughter or whatever was exposed. These days it's a little different, but back then. So we had some skeleton staff for a while. And that's why I say, for whatever reason, I didn't get COVID. And where other people around me did. So it was just some crazy, crazy hours.
Yeah, wow. So how's the staff situation now? Because, we're still finding it, I think, very difficult to get staff. What's the situation in the US?
Where do they all go? You've got a conflict, several things happening. So in the US right now, you've got a huge wave of boomers who are starting to retire. So if you look back at Georgia's history, when I first joined the company, I was the first addition in quite some time, and we really didn't employ anyone for the next 5 or 10 years. Now obviously harvesting staff, other bits and pieces, but senior management not at all. Because at the tenure there, the average tenure was 30 plus years, but as they have started to retire now, we've got newer people coming in. But generally, not only in our industry, in every industry, you just cannot find staff. And it doesn't matter if it's a janitor, a harvester, accountant, engineer, electrician, welder. It doesn't matter what you're looking for. It's extremely difficult to find. And then there's the whole issue of the immigration. As an immigrant and now a naturalized US citizen, it's the US immigration system is very interesting. And, we won't get political. Suffice to say, it's a very difficult situation.
Yeah. Well, yes, I think that's been one of the issues for us, is that a lot of people went back to their countries during COVID and they haven't returned, and the backpackers and so on. So I guess it's the same situation in the US.
But what I can say about our staff is, Georgie, we have a fairly diverse mix, and the vast majority of our hourly staff are Hispanic of some description, Dominican Republic, Mexico, Chile. It doesn't really matter. There's a whole plethora of different nationalities in that Hispanic population. And the vast majority of our staff are Hispanic. Is very large. Now, mushroom growing harvesting division, in our pack house, we recognize 10 languages that we
can. Wow.
So it really is quite remarkable, this diversity we have. And so we're fortunate enough in our business that I'm employing a young supervisor right now. He's a third generation Georgian employee. We employed him part-time. He came and drove a truck for us, moved mushrooms around in the morning, went to college in the day, and came back to work for us. Now he's a senior supervisor in one of our composting yards, doing a fantastic job.
Yeah. Wow. So do you have to have all your signage in Spanish as well as in English or other languages as well?
So on the farm side, we support Spanish. And so, yes, we have a lot of our management is bilingual. I am bilingual, but not in Spanish. I speak Swedish, but I'm learning Spanish. So I've just got to knuckle down and do that. And my kids have learned Spanish as well through high school. But yes, Spanish is certainly a very large part of the US.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember going to vegetable farms and all their signs were in Spanish as well because most people were Hispanic. So what about the farm styles in the US? Have they mainly gone to shelf farms or are they still trays? Or I've seen pictures of a Penn State farm and it was just like a single layer open type of farm.
The majority of growing systems in the US, certainly in the eastern US, and 65% of all mushrooms are grown in Pennsylvania in two different counties. There's Chester County, which is down on the state line with Delaware, and that's where you have Kennett Square. And then you have Berks County, we are immediately north of them, and Georgie is the large company there, and then you have a plethora of other smaller growers. Well, it's relative. Anything is small up in Georgie. So smaller growers down in the Kennett area, and that makes up. So 65% of the US mushroom production comes from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So that brings you to an American double. So what is an American double? Once upon a time, the industry started out and initially there were Americans, I call them Americans, and then a wave of Italian immigrants came in and they were farm laborers. And they saw people doing that. Yeah, I can do that. And so most of the farm owners down the Kennett area have Italian heritage now. And more recently, they have another wave, which has been Hispanics coming in into the area and doing a fantastic job. So the American double came from American single, which is basically 4,000 square feet or 400 square meters in two blocks of six shelves. So you have two shelves, six beds in each, but they're wooden beds, not aluminum. And they're built in a concrete block building and they use typical DX controls. So very unsophisticated by comparison to Australia or other places. And then someone had a wild idea and said, you know what? I want to increase my room. So if I put this single and this single and I knock that wall down, now I'm going to have four sets of shelves, 24 beds, and that's going to be 8,000 square feet or about 800 square meters, 740 something. Then we'll call that a double. And so an American double is what we would talk about as a standard room here and has mm-hmm. been what's been built up until recently. And in the last five or maybe last seven to maybe five, 7 years ago, there are a couple of companies here that have started investing in panel rooms and aluminum beds. Or a variety thereof. So there's no question that's the change because all these beds that we grow in here in Georgie, and if I go back, the Georgie itself is owned by as a private company, owned by Peter Georgie, formerly his father, Fred Georgie, and before he, his parents. And it all came from one little mushroom house, or plant one, mm-hmm. down on Park Road, just down the road here. And their empire came from that. But once upon a time here in Berks County, there were 80 different families growing mushrooms on different blocks and parts of the land around the area. And so as Georgie has started to expand, if anyone is familiar with Star Trek, it's like the Borg. You turn up and say, prepare to be assimilated. Once upon a time, there were 80 farms and now there's one, and that's Georgie. And we have 436 growing rooms. We case around 40,000 square meters a week, which is a lot.
Yeah.
That's 50 rooms, basically, a week.
This is very much a reflection of the Australian industry too, I think. I mean, there were hundreds of mushroom farms around the Hawkesbury and now I think we've got 47 farms nationally mushroom farms. So this consolidation is a very common pattern. So
it's going to come here as well. I mean, it's come before, it'll come again. And one of the interesting things in the US industry, more so than other areas, is a lot of farms here are vertically integrated, certainly the larger ones. So the only thing that Georgie doesn't do is make spawn. We buy spawn from Sylvan, Anatol, and from Lambert. But that's the only thing we don't do. We make our own supplement, we make our own compost, we do everything else.
Right.
And whereas other places don't. But if you come back to the room, these rooms are not ergonomic. They're not sophisticated. But they're all fully depreciated. And when labor is cheap you have very high amount of flexibility, which you do in the US, you don't have it in Australia, certainly not in France, you got it for life. But when you have that flexibility and generally a lower labor cost, why would you capitalize? There's no need to capitalize that labor. But what's happening is all of a sudden you've got this confluence of people leaving the industry as the boomers retire. You don't have that tail off that you had in Australia. And you also have higher labor rates, and then that just not there. All of a sudden, everyone's scrambling to say, how do I look to capitalize that labor and move forward? So I think that the next 5 to 10 years here in the US is going to be an enormous sea change to the industry here. And I think at the end of that time, even 10 or 15 years from now, our industry will look much like the Australian, Canadian, European style of industry. But one of the common things, whenever we have people from Holland come and visit us, and oftentimes we'll have some of the old growers that have retired, and they'll come around and they get out of their car and they go, man, I haven't smelt compost in years. Never thought I'd smell it again, because in Europe and Australia, everything has to be indoors, whereas here it's not. And so one of the most amazing things in Pennsylvania, at least, is the Right to Farm Act. So unlike Australia, which if I buy property next to yours, I should be able to enjoy the amenity of my property and its surroundings, as it should be. Here in Pennsylvania, if you buy a property next to a farm, tough. The farmer has a right to farm. He can make noise and dust and odour. I'm saying we want to be making odour. It's a reality. When you make 7,000 or 8,000 tonnes of compost a week, you're going to have some smell. And we certainly try and do our best, but we don't have that same kind of constraint. My family farm was closed down from the Land and Environment Court because of odour. There's a very unique situation in the US, at least here in Pennsylvania again.
Yeah.
But it's wood. Wooden beds. And so I'd say to these Dutch growers, okay, welcome to Georgia, put your watch back 35 years. Because what you're seeing is what used to be in Holland. They used to have wooden beds back in the late 80s before they went to aluminum.
Yeah.
But we just haven't changed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. But you're considering changing now to...
I think the industry has no choice but to change. And it's not so much to aluminum per se. What it is, it's to mechanize. Because right now everything is there's far more heavy work in what we do. And people just don't want to get their fingernails dirty anymore. If you look what the Europeans have done, especially the Dutch, are specialists in this, not only in mushrooms but elsewhere, they have developed effectively white-collar agriculture.
Yeah, well, that's it. So everything's highly mechanised and you can fill it. So at the moment you're still using the wooden trays.
Well, wooden bed. So it's a shelf but made of wood.
It's a shelf. How do you fill that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So most of our rooms are American double, because America is not like Holland. In Holland, you know, the highest land point in the Netherlands is 120 feet. Here in Pennsylvania, it's like this. And so what you have is a split-level farm. Back when you couldn't afford to invest capital and you had plenty of people, they built split-level farms. So you have a farm that the room is basically split. So at the third bed height, there's a platform at the back, and then the room at the front is lower on the side of a hill. And so you load the compost in from the back three levels up. And so we have conveyors that go into the rooms. We have put nets in the beds, and fill the back of the room. You have removable pieces of wood in the bed so you can patiently fill from the back, pull the compost forward. Casing is by hand. We have casing lorry. The guys fill buckets and they go in a little rail car, dump them on the bed. There rings in the bed to fill that. So unlike Australia, where it's highly mechanized. Well, that's correct. And so we do have one, what we call a ground level farm, which is what we would talk about in Australia. And it's a Jewfresh operation where we do have a head filler. And they fill using a head filler as opposed to what we do under the farms. But it's because of the style of the farm that was built, I think, back in the 60s as opposed to back in the 30s.
So the rooms have actually got multiple layers within the room. They're not
basically
on one.
The room is one level, but think of a split-level house in the back of a hill. So your hill level is higher, and it comes in halfway up the room, and that allows you to bring a conveyor in. And we have what's called a donkey, which is basically a high-speed diverter belt with a frequency drive, and you basically shoot the compost into the bed. It falls down, and we pull it in.
Yeah. Gosh. So I was going to ask you about adoption of new technology, because I suppose we tend to think Australians generally tend to be fairly, well, they assume that things are better in other places, but
is it ever better or worse? Like, just different. Well, so you may think that's very antique, but I can tell you, we make very good money. So it comes down to when you look at it, you think, oh my goodness me. And from an Australian perspective, when I got here, I thought, how can you possibly make money this way? But you can.
Yeah.
But the market's very different. If you look at Australia, they've done a fantastic job of increasing consumption. And the sales price there is much higher per kilo, per pound, than what we get in the US. So we have to be low cost. And with our labor flexibility here, you can do that. Now, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's a function that suits the market where we are. Because the first thing you hear, if you have someone from Europe some of them can be very forthright in their opinion, oh my God, how can you even grow a mushroom that looks anywhere near decent? And it's fair to say that our quality may not be quite as high a standard in Australia or in Europe. But I would say to the growers, why did you grow that high quality when you didn't have to? So you only have to supply what the market bears. Now, of course, you've got the Doug Trippers and Robs and everyone else who rightly says, well, I want to be the best. That's great. But you never come back from that benchmark you set. So is it right? No. And generally, the mushroom size here is smaller. Back in the 80s, the Australian growers said, yeah, we can't afford to pick up from this big. We've got to go to this big. Let's start doing that. And whereas here, the other big difference is there might be 26 to 27 million people in Australia. We have 330 million people here in the US, or whatever the number is, not 300 plus. So you've got people like Walmart, Costco, Sam's Club, Kroger, huge. You will do what they tell you. It is just that simple.
Yeah. So you can do this. Basically, it's because of labor costs. I mean, the labor costs in the US
it's
are
not
much
just
less.
Labor. Think of it as it's the microbiome of the economy that surrounds it that makes it work. You could not pick up what we do and do it in Australia.
Yeah. So it's interesting, but you're saying that this is now changing and that there's going to be this big shakeup and a lot more adoption of new technology in the next few years.
I think there has to be, and I think what's driving it is nothing to do with the outside forces of legislation or government interaction or mandate. I think what's happening is simply the labor availability. It's just not there.
Yeah.
And after COVID, everyone's saying, where did everyone go?
Yeah.
People just haven't come back to work. And like I said, it's very difficult.
So, I mean, that brings us on to other issues. I mean, I'm wondering what are the key issues faced by the US industry. And, you know, one of the things that our Australia industry is grappling with is the availability of peat for casing and the cost and availability and the greenhouse gas footprint of peat. Is this an issue in the US?
Yes. So, yeah. Because at least here in the eastern US, we only use sphagnum peat. When you put peat on by hand, you can't put Top Terra or BVB or anything. You can't do that by hand. So it's a sphagnum peat to begin with. I remember unloading 20-foot containers of Top Terra peat by hand in Australia. I do not want to do that again. And, you know, you're carting huge amounts of water all around the world. And I don't know what it was in Australia, but we used to be able to get a 40-foot container from Europe to the US for $4,000. Well, about a year ago, that went to almost $16,000. So I can't even imagine what the impact was to the Australian grower to try and bring a 20-foot container of peat from Europe to Australia. It must have just been beyond eye-watering, because it was eye-watering to us. And typically, the US industry has sourced all its peat from Canada, in the bogs here in eastern Canada. And there was a confluence of things that happened here in the US. We had a company named Scotts, they're in the gardening, I'm sure they're there in Australia too, and they decided they were not going to sell to the mushroom industry anymore. And that created problems. So then you have COVID, that created problems. Then you have trucking strikes, that created problems. And so for the first time, we were actually importing sphagnum peat from Europe. It was the first for us at the company, Georgie. And I can tell you the cost to us were eye-watering compared to what we were used to. I say this knowing what the costs were back in 2004 in Australia for peat. I can tell you, we were bringing containers of peat over where the cost of the peat in the container was less than a quarter of the cost of the total shipment.
Yeah.
So, just eye-watering.
thanks for listening to part one of this interview. Join Jenny and Jeff in part two as they talk about peat alternatives, mushroom pests and diseases, food safety, and mushroom marketing in America.